We are dealing with, so we are dealing with NLS focusing. X belongs to Rn. Initial condition given, usually given in H1. So focusing here concern the relative sign of the dispersive term, Laplacian, and the nonlinear term. So it's a plus plus, which means that when you write the energy, the Hamiltonian energy, which is conserved, constant. The Hamiltonian energy, is, which is a conserved quantity, it's the difference of two terms. Right? So this is refers to focusing. And this is also the case when you can have blow-up of solutions if initially the energy is negative. If initially the solution is not so small, relatively large. Okay? So this is the context in which we are working. So let me also remind maybe the theorem that we proved. We proved that sufficient condition to have blow up so to have solution that blow up in a finite time. So we prove a theorem that if you take phi initial condition in H1, also that decrease fast enough at infinity, not that fast, but sufficiently that this quantity is bound is in L2. So this is a hypothesis if, okay, and H negative, right, H of phi negative, and non-linearity large enough, sigma compared to the dimension. If you have all these conditions satisfied, then there exists P star finite. H of phi is the initial negative. Thank you. There exists such that the gradient C tends to infinity, L2, as C goes to T star, and at the same time, the L infinity norm, as T goes to T. Okay? And the purpose of our study is to have a more precise description of this solution that become infinite in a finite time. Okay? So, we are in this chapter, this is section 3, and we're going to concentrate in this section to critical blow up, which is the case, and in particular what is referred to as L2 norm concentration, and let me explain this title. So critical refers to the fact that we're going to be in a situation such that sigma n is exactly equal to n, to 2. So you remember that when it's smaller than 2, we have global existence, solution exists for all time, for arbitrary initial condition in H1. Should I write this?
compromise.
So another reminder is that if I take an initial condition is H1 and sigma n smaller than 2, then there exists a solution. See? For all time in H1. So what I'm saying here is that if sigma n is smaller than 2, solution exists always for all time. If sigma n is larger than 2, you have situations where solution may not exist for all time, and indeed this norms law. And what I want to concentrate now for this particular chapter is a special case sigma n equal 2 where blow-up can happen. But it happened in a very specific. And for presentation, I will consider the case n equals 2 and sigma equals 1, simply because, you know, practically it's nicer to work with this in these conditions, but it is not a restriction. Because everything that I'm doing in this situation, you could replace in another one, as long as you keep this product equal to 2. Okay. So we are here with a cubic NLF in dimension 2. And the first theorem, so in this section, again, I'm going to suppose that blow-up occurs. It occurs in this way. And I want to have a more precise description of blow-up. Okay? So the theorem 1 tells us the following. Suppose, so as I said, we take phi in H1. You can even take it, well, we don't need that at this point, but, and suppose that blow up occurs that is, suppose that as t goes to theta, the L2 norm of the solution tends to infinity. Okay, so we put ourselves in this situation, and the statement is that then C of t, the solution, does not have a strong limit in L2 as t goes to theta. Okay. So again, we are in a situation where as long as the solution exists, the energy is conserved, the L2 norm is conserved. L2 norm is conserved, but we are asking what happens for the solution as t approaches t star. Is it possible to define a limit in L2? And the answer is no. And the proof? So we're going to prove more precisely. We're going to prove that it's not possible to prove. It's not possible to find a sequence. There are no sequence of Tn going to T star such that C frequency of Tn has a limit or converges strongly, converges in L2 as Tn. We're not able to find the sequence Tn that goes to T star such that the solution at this corresponding time has a limit in L2. So this means what? In particular, this means that this blow-up solution cannot be extended after T star. This solution that blow up in the H1 norm, they cannot be extended after T star in the strong topology of L2. Okay? This is what this is. So let's do the proof. The proof is simple. It is based on two things. It's based on the Hamiltonian conservation, and it's based on the Galliard-Nirenberg inequality. So by contradiction. Suppose that suppose there exists a sequence Tn that tends to T star and that Cn of Tn has a limit, converges strongly to something, so converges, has a limit in L2. Okay, as T goes to T. As Tn goes to T. So what shall we do? We will prove that if such a situation occurs, then the gradient, the L2 norm of the gradient of C at this sequence of time is uniformly bounded. For all uniformly in T. Bounded uniformly for all Tn. And this will be a contradiction with the fact that that gradient C of T tends to infinity in L2 when T goes to T star. Okay? You with me with the contradiction? So this is, so what we're going to write, the Hamiltonian conservation. That integral of C, and I'm going to write it at time Tn, at this sequence of time Tn. Now this is a constant. You see, I want to prove a uniform bound on this. So I'm going to. So, what can I say? Well, the H2 norm of the gradient of C at time Tn, small or equal to absolute value of H, this is a number, plus, well, this. And now, of course, you see Galliard-Nirenberg coming here. So what does Galeazzo, Neil, and Bertrand
tell us? That in two dimensions,
let me write it with F.
In two dimensions, you can bound the L4 norm to the power 4 by a constant. Well, this constant is a uniform, it's a number, depends only on this power and the dimension, multiplied by grade F, L2.
So if you remember, we wrote that inequality with 2 sigma plus 2 and some powers here depending on dimension. But in this particular case, I am in dimension 2, working with the L4 norm. This is so this is true only in dimension equal to. Good. So I apply this to the right-hand side there. And I get dx smaller or equal to h plus a constant. So when I apply it to the solution, the L2 norm is conserved. So I can replace L2 by n of c. I write here n of c and gradient c n. No, I'm not going to do this immediately. I'm going to do that a little bit later. 1 minute. Before I use this, I'm going to I have to use the fact that phi of Tn has a strong limit in L2, that it's a Cauchy sequence in L2. So I'm going to introduce a Tn. I'm going to do one thing before the application of that. M. This is a triangular inequality. So first I do this. Okay, and M is fixed. Okay. All right, and now I apply Galeazzo-Nirenberg to this quantity. H plus, I apply the Galeazzo-Nirenberg to the first term, I get the L2 norm of T. So M is fixed. So Tn is a fixed time. There is a constant, thank you. Now since the Psi of Tn converges in L2, it's a Cauchy sequence, so there exists M. This is the M that I will choose, large enough but fixed, such that if N is larger than M, this sequence, let's say psi of Tn minus psi of Tm, L2, is smaller than a certain constant. And I can take this constant as small as possible.
So I would take a smaller than 1/2. Well, in fact, I'm going to take it smaller than 1/2. And then here we are. You see the contradiction? And now we are here with the inequality. Half of one half, yes, plus. So here I just use the triangular inequality. I separate this difference by the sum. So I copy the rest, doesn't really matter. There were C right here. All right, so what do you see? You see that you get 1/2 of gradient C of Tn, smaller than or equal to H plus constant plus bounded terms, right? You agree with me that this is fixed because M is fixed. So here is a uniform bound. Big constant K. Independent of N. This index that measures the sequence of Tn. So uniform bound for gradient of Tn. This is the contradiction. All right. So this is the first little result. But it tells you that you cannot extend in L2 the solution past the singularity time that occurs for the H1 norm. Yes? Yes. See, this one I don't touch. M is fixed. I play only with this one. Where? Yes, I'm using that if I have A4. I write it A plus B L4, A plus B minus B, right? Smaller equal to a certain constant. Maybe I did not write the constant. Yeah, constant. If you want, or it doesn't. If you have the L4 norm, this is it.
Okay? So this is the end of this theorem. Let's continue to try to have a good, a better a picture of what these blow-up times. This one is too high for me. Can you put it down? Thank you. So, now if you look the literature about look at the literature about blow-up, you will see that the first the people who did this first result about description of blow-up did that in a radially symmetric situation, where you reduce yourself to solution that have a symmetry that depends only on the radial component, don't depend on theta. And later, people have extended their results to the genuine 2D case. So I'm going to discuss the radial case because, of course, the calculations are much easier and quite transparent. But for this, I would like to have a statement that tells us that if the solution is radially symmetric and if it blows up, then blow up must occur at the origin, which is very intuitive, right? If solution blows up and it is radially symmetric, then naturally it will blow up at the origin. But let's prove that. So if solution, so let me first, maybe I should be sure that everybody understands the terminology. We say that the function u of two variables is radially symmetric or have radial symmetry if, in fact, it depends only on the radial coordinate r, which is okay. It does not depend on the angular variable, and you can say that for any dimension. I'm here in dimension 2. So theorem 2 says that if if the solution psi is radially symmetric, so it's a complex variable. So it means that psi. So let's look here at the equation. If you suppose that phi is radially symmetric, so suppose that phi depends only on the radial component, but phase and amplitude, then the solution conserves this property. The solution of NLS conserves this property. So it is correct to say that if phi initially is radially symmetric, does not depend on theta, this property is still true for all time for the solution, and I'm registering to this situation. So if phi is radially symmetric and phi blows up in a finite time, and when I say blows up, I mean that we are in the situation that the gradient of the solution tends to infinity, then blow up must occur at the origin, and in the following sense, for all A positive, we're going to prove three, not the same A. One. For all A positive, we'll prove three things. We'll prove that gradient C
It's enough to take the L2 norm
in a neighborhood of the origin. This tends to infinity. So it's really near the origin that everything happens. Second, if I take the ratio of the L4 norm outside the ball centered at the origin, and I divide it by the gradient, and here I'm going to introduce a notation rho phi that I'm going to define in a minute. This tends to zero as t goes to theta. And what is rho a? Rho a, rho a as a function of absolute value of x, is a C-infinity function that goes, that's equal to 1 up to 1 up to a, is 0 after 2a and decreases nicely. I mean the denominator square, thank you. So look, let's look again at the, you see the energy up there, the difference of these two quantities, which is for us now sigma equals 1, it's a difference of you see the energy here, I mean, as long as the solution exists, it is a constant. But as we approach T star, well, as we approach theta, as long as we don't touch theta, it's still a constant. But these two quantities tend to infinity. So both quantities tend to infinity as we approach theta. But here we are saying that if I compare the L4 norm outside the ball and the L2 norm inside the ball, well, it tends to zero because this is everything happens near the origin. And the fourth, maybe I have one more statement, even if we don't prove everything, I think it is important to see them. They're all based on the same ideas. The third statement is that if I consider the L infinity norm near the origin, then this tends to infinity. So rho A is a function that is zero away from zero and one near the origin. Okay, so how do we prove this? Well, there are two ingredients. To prove this, lemma 1 and lemma 2. Lemma 1 is a lemma due to Hoss,
Well, it appears in a paper in 77 in CMP, Communication in Mathematical Physics. And since then, it has been used over and over again for all problems where you have radially symmetric solutions. And it states the following, that if that for all u in H1, so it's in fact, I'm going to state it in dimension n, so you have it, we're going to use it to inform in dimension 2. If you have u in H1 such that, which has, and u is radially symmetric, so depends only on the radial coordinate. Then you can bound the L infinity norm of the solution outside the ball of radius A by a constant divided by the distance to the ball. And here gradient U, L2, well, everything outside that ball. Homogeneity, you have to put a square. So what does that mean? It means that, you see, you can always replace this product by UH1 if you like. You can always replace this product by you can always rewrite this to L infinity outside the ball. So what does it tell us? Here is the origin. You are dealing with just the problem in a domain which is outside this ball. A is fixed. In any dimension, we can bound the L infinity norm of the function by H1 norm as long as we deal outside the ball, and the price we pay is that we have a factor here, 1 over a to a certain power. As a goes to, well, as a gets smaller and smaller, this constant getting larger and larger. Then, no, sorry. This is a lemma that we will use, but it is not, does not concern the solution of NLS. It's just for any function u in H1, you can control the L infinity norm outside the ball by the H1 norm. But, oh, sorry, u is H1 and u is radially symmetric.
I'm talking about L2 norm on the right hand side, but integrate all over the L2 norm, right? Not
along the. We integrate in the Rn, yes, we integrate in here, outside the ball. But you know that, in general, one cannot bound an L infinity norm by H1, even in two dimensions. But this tells you that, yes, it is true if it's radially symmetric, but if you are away from the origin. So I'm not going to do the proof, although here the proof is really elementary. It's just a calculation. And the second lemma is, again, the Galliardo-Nirenberg inequality. Do we need the... Oh, we don't need yet the best constant. So, in fact, I'm just going to rewrite it in the form that we will use it.
So everybody understands the statement? The constant depends on the radius. Of course, you can, well, you can use it as much as you like, but as A goes to zero, it's, you lose information.
And the constant is for each function.
So this constant, no, depends on the dimension, right? Is that right? So you need, Lars? Probably, yes. It depends on, well, it doesn't depend on, the dependence in A is here.
I'm saying dependent on U.
Oh, no, depends, not dependent. This is an inequality for any function U, does not depend on U. Depend on the dimension.
In the, near the origin, I can make it as, without touching
anything. Here. You pay the price by the distance.
But I'm talking about
the constant. The constant? You know this? You measure the L infinity term outside. I mean, everything is done outside this ball.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
Fix A, for example,
you fix A.
And change only U. And then you can make it as T near the origin as I want.
You can, but it won't change this. Because it's the L infinity term outside.
Oh, outside.
Outside. Outside.
Sorry,
yeah. Okay. So this is one an ingredient. Let me write the second ingredient up there and here. So lemma 2, well, it's again the Galliardoni-Renberg, and I thought we were using the best constant, but it's for the next theorem. So it's relatively simple. If you take U in H1, I'm going to write it in the context of radially symmetric solution. So I'm going to bound the L4 norm of U multiplied by this function rho that cuts everything that is outside 2A, the ball 2A, and you can bound this by a constant that depends on nothing. So I'm going to use it in this form. So it is I'm going to use it in this form. Well, we use it, it's the same as this one, essentially. I have added this in the middle because when I use... So this is the Galliardoni-Renberg in that in the ball of radius 2a. And so now we have these two elements.
we're going to prove A, to prove 1. I would say no. I think no. This is a constant. If it depends on A, everything falls. It does not depend on A. Maybe we should recover it. It's not difficult to prove that part. In, for example, this is proof of this. I mean, in several places, but at least in dimension two, there was a book that I studied a long time ago, Nadizhenskaya. It's a book 68 or 67. And this is one thing that is used over again in Navier-Stokes equation 2D. So it was in that book, viscous flows. Okay. So these are the two elements. I'm not going to prove it. No. Lemma 1 I don't prove, and Lemma 2 I don't prove. Lemma 1 is proved in... We did not prove Lemma 1.
No,
I proved
it in 1.
Oh, you proved it in 1. Okay. So proof of 1. Well, it's the same story again and over again. So, you start with the Hamiltonian. And the L4 norm, you separate in 2 parts. The part C integrating between in the small ball of radius A over 2. So A is fixed, right? A is fixed arbitrarily. We want to prove this. A is fixed arbitrarily. You separate in 2 parts, and it's all right, and then you use the, so you see this part is the L4 norm in the ball, inside the ball. So for this part, you use Galliardo-Nirenberg, and for that part, so I'm going to use Galliardo-Nirenberg, I will get a constant, I will get gradient U L2, so the 2A, so I put A. And this really I don't care, because it's really the L2 norm which is conserved. But each time I see L2 norm, I can bound it by the solution, the N of C, the conserved quantity. Plus, now here, I will bound the L4 norm by L infinity square L2 square. L infinity square, L2 square. Right. Let me write it on the sign. going to bound L infinity norm, L4 norm, in this ball, outside this ball, by phi L infinity outside the ball, multiplied by L2 norm, and L2 is conserved. I will have to copy this here. But now with the Strauss lemma, this is the L infinity norm outside a ball centered at the origin. I can bound that by n equals 2, right? So 1 over A. Gradient U. So I have no power here, and I have n of phi to the power 3/2. You agree with me? 3/2 is there is 1/2 here, L2 norm 1/2. Well, the L2 norm here, and this is the square of the L2 norm. No. We have 2, 1, 1. This is exactly the very important point. Okay, so let me copy it here. So you see, when you apply Yadon-Nirenberg in general here, you have U4 bounded by the L2 norm square of the gradient, the L2 norm square of the function. But outside the ball, because of Strauss lemma, I have 3 powers on the L2 and only 1 power on the gradient. So I have gain, because of course the gradient is a bad term and the L2 norm is a good term. So I have gain 1 power here. So let me add it here. Plus a constant over A is fixed, gradient psi L2 multiplied by N of phi 3/2. So I would like just to stop 1 minute and ask you if whether you have understood my last remark, that you see, we have the L4 norm to estimate inside and outside. Inside, I have the gradient U square multiplied by things that are bounded. But outside, I have only the gradient C, no square there. So this is a very important point. Okay, so where are we? We should be almost ready to conclude. It's psi. So I use U for general inequalities, and psi is the solution. I use psi for the solution. U is a general function. So what did we get here? Let me copy what we have. So you see where we are heading to number one. We want to prove that the L2 norm of the gradient inside the ball tends to infinity, that Broad occurs at the origin. So for the moment, yes? So
for the moment I have this equals smaller equal to h. I'm going to write only the important term. So I'm going to put k. K will represent a constant. So this is a constant. C, I write this one. C multiplied by n, multiplied by n, all that constant I put in k. This k will depend on the initial condition. So I don't write these terms. And here, well, I have this constant, another k, depends on a and phi. A is fixed, depends on A and the initial condition. And now what? Well, you see, we want to prove, we know that this tends to infinity. We want to prove that this tends to infinity. So we're going to replace this. So I'm not K, like that. And here I'm going to use just the usual AB, smaller than equal to 1/2 of A plus, well, 1/2 A plus constant B. I can play with the constant. So 1/2 can play with the constant. Let me write it clearly, this inequality, that as you know, but that is used over and over and again. You can say that 2AB is bounded by epsilon A squared plus 1 over epsilon B. So you can put as little as you want of one of them, and then you compensate by as much as you need for the second one. So here, I put a small coefficient in front of this one, that I will want to balance with the left hand side, and I compensate with. Okay. Square here. Which one? I'm saying that I have this product k1 gradient c l2 a, and I'm going to bound it by a certain constant here plus another constant k1 square, and you can play with this constant to make us this one as small as possible. So we put 1/2. If I put 1/2 here, I have to put another number here, maybe 2 or 4. Okay. So this is what I am doing. And now, of course, this one, I can always replace. I take some color, so I need to copy it again. Now, the L2 norm outside the ball, I can always replace it by something bigger, which is the L2 norm everywhere. And now I have 1 here and 1/2. So, here. Well, I have all these constants that I must write. A, is it A over 2? It doesn't matter. A. Well, as t goes to t star, this path tends to infinity. We are in a situation when we have blow up. Thus, necessarily, that one must go to infinity also. Okay, so here is A, and B and C are really similar. Let's do B probably. Well, this is 1, we prove 1. 2 and 3 are really very close to 1. Let's do it and keep the last theorem for tomorrow. Well, you know, it's so similar. 2 is very similar to 1. I'm not going to prove it. It's very, very similar. I think I should leave 2 and 3 for you because it is too... It's too close to 1 that we did, so we're going to just waste a bit of time. Or maybe we can prove 3. If you want to prove C, you write H, the Hamiltonian. You must separate in several, in 2 parts. Both terms. Smaller than A and larger than A. And then you divide each side. You divide both sides by the integral from x gradient. You divide both sides by this quantity. And then you take the limit as t goes to t star. Right? So what do you have? On the left-hand side, you have h. This tends to infinity. This was 0.1. The left-hand side tends to 0, right? You take the limit as t goes to infinity. This is 1. This, I think we leave it for the moment.
This one is if we keep and this one is the L4 norm outside the ball divided. This is exactly this turns to zero because of two.
Right? You have to take the limit.
You agree with me? And what do we get? I'm a bit confused. Well, how do we conclude? I think that part of something we proved earlier is that this limit is bounded. And I want to take ln infinity from here. So this I think is a consequence of what we proved in for part one. And so we end up having the limit of this quantity is finite. So we end up so it means that this limit divided by has a finite limit as t goes to t star, but since the denominator tends to infinity, the numerator must tend to infinity also. So this tends to infinity, but again, you can always say that the L4 norm is bounded by the L infinity norm multiplied by L2, which is constant. So if this tends to infinity, that must go to infinity. So this is the end of theorem 2. So the proof of 2 is in my notes for those who want to see them in detail. But essentially it shows that when blow up occurs in a radially symmetric situation, blow up occurs at the origin. And so tomorrow we will conclude by proving what's called the L2 concentration. And we will prove that in this critical situation of dimension sigma equals 1, dimension 2,
Well, the blow up situation, now we are in a radially symmetric situation. The blow up is that solution becomes very large near the origin, right? When blow ups occur, this is, for example, this is X. Let me do this picture again. I draw the amplitude of the solution at a certain time, close to blow up, so it becomes very large near the origin, and then tends to zero. And what we're going to do tomorrow is to estimate the L2 norm of the solution in an interval very, very close to the origin. In fact, we were going to estimate in an interval of length, well, we'll say it more precisely, but almost like t star minus t one half. So it's a very small interval of x, if you want, but of course the solution is very large. And we will estimate the L2 norm of the solution in this small interval. And we will prove that it is large enough, that it is finite, and it is in fact estimated very, almost very precisely in terms of the L2 norm of this function R that I introduced a year ago, that was the ground state that played so important role in 2D, in two dimensions. So this is called the concentration of L2 norm, because the L2 norm, there is a finite amount of the L2 norm. How much? Well, exactly that of the solitary wave, the solution of the unique positive solution of this equation, in an interval very close, very small, and then, you know, smaller than t star minus t one half, near the point of blow up. So this will prove tomorrow again. And for that, the ingredient will be these two lemmas that we stated here, the Galliard-Nirenberg, the Strauss lemma. But we will need to use the best constant in the Galliard-Nirenberg inequality, and the best constant will be given in terms of this L2 norm. So this is what we will do tomorrow. And then, since it's the last class, make some conclusions. And I will discuss, in particular with the students, but of course everybody is welcome, if we can have one meeting of 2 hours to discuss the problems the week after. All right? So if you want the proof of the intermediate thing, it's all in here. You can borrow my notes. See you tomorrow.